in Siman Kuf Yud Ches, as we mentioned. And we were towards the end of Sif Aleph. So we had this very interesting halacha in Sif Aleph towards the end. Im hodiyah l'chaveyot tzuras l'chosim v'gam amal l'olik l'chomish shodiyah l'chaveyot arim l'chosim echad. That really were two different dinim that were being stated over here. One is that, as the Shach points out, that if the person who's sending the package of meat or cheese, whatever, says to Yovei Kochavim, well, let's say it's something that normally would require two chasamos, like meat or fish or yayin or wine, and he told the Yovei Kochavim that I made a particular chosam in a specific way, so then that would be grounds for the Yovei Kochavim to be more fearful about messing with it, since he's going to be more fearful about messing with it. So even if it's something which would normally be an issa d'oraisa, that would require two chosamos, so here one chosam would be sufficient. And then, sort of blended in into that halacha was im hodiyah l'chaveyot tzuras l'chosam, where the Shulchan Aruch said, well, if you told your chaver, like the person who was mishaleach, the chosam, the package, told the recipient what the chosam is going to look like, so then, for sure, that since the recipient is going to know to look for a very specific chosam, we'll be able to check and see whether it was tampered with by the goy. So that's also going to be sufficient, even if you didn't inform the goy, and that also would be sufficient grounds to be makel to only require one chosam as opposed to two chosamas. If the recipient knows exactly what the chosam is that he's supposed to look for, so he'll see either that chosam is there or the chosam isn't there, right? Yes.
I'm assuming the chosam is something really unique. Would that be correct?
Right. It would be something that, you know, a person wouldn't just, you know, on their own think of being able to do, and whatever it was, it wouldn't be able to duplicate. They wouldn't be able to duplicate it, you know, to be exactly the way that it was intended to be. Okay. And then there was sort of a third din that the Shach added on. And he said that maybe this is why the Mechaber kind of wrote this halacha as a, not either or, but rather as an A and B statement, that, oh, that if you tell the recipient, the sender tells the recipient what to look for, and you tell the Yovei Kochavim that there's a chosam there, so then one chosam will be sufficient. We said it's not an it's an either-or proposition. It's not a, you know, A and B proposition. Mm-hmm. It's not a this and that proposition. So why is it a begam? So he says that maybe the reason why we started off with the statement that the sender, that the sender informed the recipient of what to look for, is that it's meant as like good advice, right? You should never abstain from offering good advice, right? Mm-hmm. Neitz Tova Kamash Malan, that we're giving, making a recommendation that even when you're sending something, now this is sort of a funny statement to some degree, because the way the Shach phrases it is that even if you're sending something that requires two chosamas, and the Shach sounds like he's saying, that I'm not telling you to subtract a chosam, even if you're going to send two chosamas, a basar dag and chatichos dag and yayin that you're sending with two chosamas, you still should inform the recipient about the chosamas. Not that you then should subtract one of the chosamas. Like if you did subtract one of the chosamas, that would be okay. Mm-hmm. But really, in an ideal world, when you have this type of an issa d'oraisa, you should, number one, send two chosamas, and number two, you should also inform the chaveo tzuras chosam exactly what the chosam looks like, so that he'll be able to check it. All right. That's the Mechaber. Now the Ramah adds something very interesting, which the Ramah follows up upon. Remember we said that Kuf Yud Ches is really a follow-up of Samach Gimel. Well, Kuf Yud Ches itself has an additional follow-up later on, which is in Siman Kuf Lamed. Siman Kuf Lamed is devoted to a very particular type of chasima situation, and that is chasimas hayayin, that when you're sending along wine, biyado v'kochavim, which of course was a large part of the way that the business world functioned, particularly when you're dealing, when we're living in Medinos Ashkenaz, where a lot of the Jewish, you know, Mekach HaMemker was in the realm of yayin, and all kinds of questions of, you know, how do you deal with doing business in the realm of Yayin, and at the same time keep all of the necessary laws of Stam Yedim. And Rabbeinu Tam had a lot to say on that subject, and the Halakha has a lot to say on that subject. There's a whole siman which is devoted to Dinei Chasimas HaYayin, the way in which you're supposed to seal the wine caskets, jugs, barrels that were being transported from place to place. So there we're going to have a follow-up of this statement that the Rama is about to make. So Rama makes a statement here, and he says that what would the porters, you know, who would the porters normally be? The porters
here is in Kuf Lamed, or here is in
Kuf Yud Ches. So who would the porters typically be? Figure that the porters were generally non-Jews. Okay, so if you had non-Jewish porters, you always had to affix two chazamas, so that might be a giant headache. So says the Rama, don't worry, I'm going to modify this halacha. I'm going to qualify it to some degree and say that the main time I have to be worried about two chazamas is not with respect to the goyim. Goyim, you know, they're generally fearful because they don't want to get into trouble with the Jews, because they know that the Jews have very meticulous standards. They want to be able to remain in good standing, particularly since they're getting business and salaries and whatever else out of it. So they don't want to mess around with the Jews' merchandise. But, you know, the people that you really need to be worried about is the Yisraelim Chashudim. It's those Jews who aren't so firm, who aren't so meticulous. Those are the ones you have to be afraid of, because they're not going to be so fearful of their fellow Jews. You know, the Goyim are afraid of us, but, you know, the Jews are going to do business with Jews, so then, you know, you got to be, like, you know, much more circumspect. So that's what the Rama says.
We're talking about Jews who would be transporting this.
Yes, he says, V'yeshon lo'inin beis chosamas, that you only have to be worried about, you only have a requirement of two chosamas, rak v'yisrael choshet. If you're dealing with Yisrael, this is the Raman, Simen Kuf Yud Ches, towards the end of Sefal, he says, you only have to be worried about beis chosamas, v'yisrael choshet, if you're dealing with a Jew who can't be trusted with respect to what? The Shach says one thing, Taz says another thing. They both sort of supplement each other. Shach says the chashid lahachlit. They have a Jew who's chashid that he's going to, you know, take advantage of the kosher, you know, more choice, you know, merchandise, and he's going to switch it for non-kosher merchandise. I'm worried about a Yisrael chashid, not with respect to Yayin, because I'm not chashid that Yisrael is going to be menasech Yayin, so that I don't have to worry about. But with respect to the other Yisrael, the rice of the bus, the chatikos dag, I have to be worried about a Yisrael, but I'm going to require beis chosamas. The Taz adds that even if he's not chashid lahakli, just chashid leechol, he's chashid that he's going to eat these things, he's chashid that he eats treif, or he's chashid that he eats a non-kosher fish. Okay, so if it's the type of thing that everybody's mekel about, you see, he's not such a bad guy. He's just like, the olam is mekel, so I'll also be mekel. The olam is mekel to eat tuna fish without hechsher. Okay, so we hold it's mutter, okay? The olam is mekel, whatever it is. So he's mekel too, so we're not going to be chashid him lahachli. But if it's the type of thing most people are machmir about, you know, most people don't eat pork, and he eats pork. Most people don't eat, you know, nevelos, whatever, and he does. You know, so then such a person, if it's the sort of thing where most people would not be mekel, would he be mekel? So then he's also chashid lahachlif. Okay, those are the two different scenarios in which he would be chashid. The only time, say, he's not chashid is if he's not so meticulous about, you know, not eating it, but it's the sort of thing that lots of people are mekel about, like vina sakum, that sort of thing. So, okay, so he's not so meticulous, but we're not going to hold him to be chashid.
But what are we chashid that he might do?
Lahachlif. We're worried that he's going to swap it with something else, okay? We're going to, that he's either for pecuniary purposes or for selfish purposes, that in terms of eating it. Or that he's going to swap the kosher food for the non-kosher food. He's going to swap the non-kosher meat for meat that was not slaughtered properly. He's going, okay, that's what we're worried about. Maybe he was hungry. No, it's not that he needs to eat, right? If he's the sort of Jew who would eat non-kosher meat, so maybe he was hungry, so he ate it for that reason. He said, okay, fine, I'll replace it with non-kosher meat. What do I care? Okay. But when I go, you have to worry about the goyim. As long as I have one chosim, they're going to be mirsos, that if they mess up, they're going to be fearful. If they mess up even that one chosim, they're going to get into a heap of trouble. And therefore, say, they're not going to take any chances, even if there's only one chosim. So, can I be somach on that lechatchila or not? So says the Rama that I gave you a heter, but the Rama give it, the Rama take it away. I'm going to, you know, now qualify my qualification. I'm going to say that, yeah, it's true that there's more room to be mekel, me'ikar adin, but, you know, that's only b'di'evet. B'di'evet yesh l'smach hazeh. So b'di'evet sounds like, you know, l'chatchila you should really be more meticulous about this, right? So it says...
To chotamot?
With respect to requiring two chosamos, even with a goy, right? Yeah. So, it says the, So says the Rama in Sif Beis or Siman Kuf Lamed. So now we'll turn to Kuf Lamed. Kuf Lamed, what are we talking about over here? I'm sorry? Oh, you're supposed to go to Kuf Lamed, I'm sorry. Okay.
By the way, do you have a minute after this?
Yes, yes, sure.
Okay.
Okay. So im hifke biat obi kachoyim achosim echad asav shtia umutar bahanav ushiyekidol kemen zavis. So the Mechaber gives you kind of the regular stam official black letter law that if you only had one chosim and you sent wine with an obi kachoyim, it's not good enough. Like he said here in Siman Kuf Yudches, wine is one of those things that requires two chosamas, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm worried that he's going to use the wine for nisuch purposes, and he's going to return different wine. Or take a little bit of the wine for nisuch purposes and leave the rest of the wine, you know, and the rest of the wine will still be also because of maga or bikochavim. So I'm worried, you know, that I require two chosamas when it comes to yayin, right?
I thought in this day and age we weren't so worried about yayin nesuch, we were worried more about stam yayin.
I am. I'm worried that what he's going to be left with is going to be stam yinim, right?
Oh, okay.
Is that what I'm worried about? Like, okay. I'm worried that he's going to be left with stam yinim. Not that he's going to be left with yayin nesa.
Okay.
He's going to be left with stam yinim.
Okay.
And even though it's only nisa drabanan, nonetheless, because the goyim have such a fervor and passion for being menasek yayin, so I'm going to be machmir anyway. We're talking about that. We're not talking about nisa deraisa. We're nisa drabanan. When nisa deraisa will be, if we have his worry, he's going to be menasek yayin, and he's going to leave the yayin with me, right?
Right.
But he's not. I'm worried he's going to be menasek yayin. He's going to return different yayin, or he's going to be menasek some yayin, mm-hmm. and then he's going to leave like he'll be menasek like a trickle of yayin and leave the rest of the yayin over. That's what I'm worried about. That's the yayin esek case. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anyway, so so the Mechaber just gives you this the regular din. The one chosim is not good enough. Comes along the Rama and says that. No, those who say that if I'm dealing with an akum, that's really the same thing over here, that one chosim is going to be good enough, right? Mm-hmm. Etc. And he says, so here the Rama says, so therefore, it seems that the, and the Chavos Binyamin quotes this, and he says that based on what the Rama says in Siman Kuf Lamed, it seems that the Rama comes to the conclusion over there that you could be mekel not only b'diyavid, but even l'chatchila, the mina ka'olam, is to be mekel with one chosam when it comes to an obi kochavim. So we just basically, if that's the case, it's kind of an interesting thing because the whole world knows about this din of two chosamas, right? Mm-hmm. So we just did away with the entire din of two chosamas unless you're sending your merchandise with some completely non-from yid. But if you're sending with a goy, so then you're basically okay.
Okay, so I'm not sure I understand something here.
With one chosam, yeah.
With one chosam, he says, Ein zorch la'kir chotamo, ela im kein, ro'oya shechotamo mekulkal, ve'az asur.
Yeah.
Aval ein zorch libdok achar zeh.
Right.
In other words, if it's mekulkal, we assume that it's no good?
No, you don't have to check to see if it's mekulkal. Like, you know, what you don't see is not going to hurt you, and that's the next halacha. So that's sif base, okay? Kim and Sheh, yes?
Himself says here, Yesh Kasu de B'diyevid Yesh Lahatir. He says here also B'diyevid. Why are we assuming this is a broader heter?
Because, in Siman Kuf Lamed, you mean? Siman Kuf Lamed, he said, V'chein Nogin Haka.
But I thought that B'diyevid.
No,
no. Yesh Kasu de B'diyevid Yesh Lahatir. Let's say, go ahead and do it.
So the Chagas Binyamin assumes that Bechein Nogin Haka means Bechein Nogin Haka Lemin Lechatkila. That's what he assumes. I'm just reading from the Chagas Binyamin. Okay, you could argue. generally, Bechein Nogin sounds like Nogin Lechatkila Hakel. You're saying Bechein Nogin Hakel if it would have been a B'diyevid situation. That's how you're reading it. Okay.
Or Bechal, is that even going?
Yeah, except that he says, I don't have this with me. I don't have the Torah here. He says that the Dalchi Moshe here in Siman Kuf Yud Ches also says that Nogin Hakel Lechatkila. That's what I didn't look in the Darkei Moshe.
Okay, yeah. But I was even wondering if Chayin Nogin Lachal is even going back on that. Maybe it's going on the Ein Tzach Lahakir Chosama.
No, because that's just a din. The fact that you don't have to be makir the chosam is a din that is not a minog. That's just a din that everybody would agree to. You know, this is a minog. You know, whether we're going to be knowing the hakyan less than two chosamas it would be more shayak to lashon nogin. The other thing, the ain sof makir chosamo, is just he's reflecting back something which is a black letter, law in Siman Kuf Yeches that we're about to read in Sif Beis in the Mechaber, and he's just carrying it over to Siman Kuf Lamed. He wouldn't say Bechein Noah Vin Lahakya with respect to that particular Nekuda. I don't have the tour here, but all right, anyway. All right. Kimet Shektima Karoi Shnei Chosamas. We're back in Kuf Yeches Sif Beis. Kimet Shektima Karoi Shnei Chosamas, but don't you talk Shnaim. So once you've fixed, yeah? Oh, you have the Dalkei Moshe.
Yes.
Okay, so this is we're all coming to Shkhal Yuchapes the Nigin Pidi Evik of Vinatam Din Yanis. The Nigin Pidi Evik of Vinatam sounds like Pidi Evan Allah Khatkila. And that's going on this?
It's
a Vinatam. Yeah, that's the Dakashi to be so harsh, so he should go so Yanak Shabikos. He says it's a better no Nigin Pidi Evik of Vinatam. I gotta tell you, that sounds very much like a b'di'evit to me. Maybe because he uses the lashon b'di'evit, to me that sounds like b'di'evit. But it could be, So he says here, yeah, just reading, it would seem to be a strong indication. That's very interesting. So if you take a look, ulekaman, you know what? So maybe it's my own fault in terms of maybe I'm reading too much. This is what the Chokos B'yam said. Yesh lismach al zeh. Well, come on, Siman Kuf Lamed Sif Beis Hosif Harama Techeino again. So he didn't add the word Lechatchila. I'm adding the word Lechatchila because that's how I understood what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But I guess Techeino again that would make all. But what is he adding then? The Rama said, "But the ever Yesh Lismach Hazeh." Then he says, "Then he added Techeino again."
There's a difference between Rama saying, "I feel you can do this," and saying it's Taka.
Okay. All right. Fine. Good. Okay. I will accept that. Modification. Good. Okay. Fine. So Techeino again, that would be with the ever Sumach on this. In which case, this is a big nafkamina. So that's a very important kuder. So it's a big nafkamina. Nafkamina is. The Chatzkila was still going to do two chosamas, when we send the Yideyak. Yes, that's okay. So, wondering why everybody does it. So, the answer is because V'chei Nogi is V'chei Nogi B'diyevit. Okay, fine. Base. Kimishek Timu Kavai, Shnei Chosamas. Thank you. Once, if a person has, in fact, done what they're supposed to do in terms of the chosamas, Shnei Chosamas, Kvidram Shitzak Shnaim, with respect to those things that require two chosamas, Echodram Shitzak Be'echod, or one chosam with respect to Gvina Pas and so forth, the things that require only one chosam. Some things require no chosamas, right? I mean, if there's no like real problem at all, like chemas akum, which everybody's makel about, what are you going to put into the butter, assuming that, there were, in those days, there were no editors that could have been added to the butter. So, they just said that basically it's mutter. So, basically, Chuva says there's like chemas akum, you don't require a chosam altogether. So, you might have a thing where there's no shash whatsoever. It's like, I'm transporting raw nuts, there's nothing that anyone's going to put into the nuts. It's not even going to require one chosam, okay?
So, there's no concern, for example, of pig butter or something.
Well, there wasn't in those days. No, because you can't make butter from anything which is not a kosher, animal. It has to be only kosher. Only kosher milk turns into butter, right?
Is it baduk? I mean,
yeah, that's baduk. Baduk minusa. So you don't need to go and check it out. Remember we said that it's considered to be praiseworthy and appropriate to check it out, but there's no need to check it out. Now what this means in part is that, let's say it's my own thing that I left with an akum with two chosamas and one chosam. I was the mafkin, and now I'm picking up what I had deposited with him for safekeeping. I don't even have to look and see if the chosamas are still there. I don't even have to look to see if the chosamas are still there, because I know that he had a sufficient measure of mirsas because I had affixed the chosamas. Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's good enough. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or if I was the mishalech and now it's somehow the package comes back to me, or if I'm the recipient, but the mishalech told me that it had the chosamas. So since the mishalech told me it had the chosamas, so I knew that the akum was mirsas, I don't even have to check the chosamas. I don't need to check the chosamas. I don't need to check. I could just get the package in my hands and go like this. and I'm just ripping everything. I'm not even checking to see if there are any chosamos. You know, I just, you know, rip indiscriminately the entire wrappings because I'm really, really hungry, and I start to ravenously, you know, bite into the meat. So no problem. Everything is 100% hunky-dory. Right. Okay. I mean, lechatchila, you shouldn't be so ravenous, but, you know, but lechatchila, I don't have to check for the chosamos at all. Very interesting. I don't have to check the chosamos. But if you were stupid enough to do it, now I always say stupid enough, but it's not stupid enough because apparently it's really considered to be a hither. This is interesting. You just read the Machaber, you would think this is one of these cases where you say, oh, you were dumb enough to ask, so I have to answer it. No. You say, well, it actually is a good thing to do, but we're saying that even if you didn't do it, it would be 100% mutter. But if you did check, and it turned out there was a problem, so now you have tzoros. You say, wait, this isn't the chosam that the Mishlech told me about, or this isn't the chosam that I put on the package when I left it with the Yakum. Then it's aser. Then it's aser, okay? Even if you had made two chosamas, if you don't recognize the two chosamas, even though there still are two chosamas that are on it, or let's say that I made two chosamas and it was an object which midaraisa required two chosamas, and one of the chosamas is completely intact, but the other chosam is not intact. So you say, okay, well, you know, the for deraisa, I'm worried that the Akum did a really good job repairing, you know, the chosam that he broke, you know, if it's something which is a deraisa. So if I don't have two chosamas, if it's a drabban, and I had made the two chosamas, and I only really needed to make one chosam, like a Gvinas Akum or something like that, and one of the chosamas is broken, so, and the other chosam is still intact, I say, yeah, for something like this, the Akum is not going to, you know, work that hard, okay? So therefore, as long as one chosam is still intact, I can assume that it's still okay. But if it's something that really required two chosamos, and even if one of them is still intact, it's still not going to be good enough. Now, what the poskim talk about is that I saw this in the Chokas Binyamin, also quoting from the Shmer Sabayas and the Rashba, says that in the event that I can attribute it to like wear and tear of the derech, like it's a type of kilkul which doesn't look like a human being messed with it. It looks like, you know, so it was out a little bit, you know, where maybe there was a dog and maybe the dog pulled at it a little bit. You know, it looks like maybe, you know, dog bite signs, or it looks like it's just, you know, something that normally comes apart a little bit based on the wear and tear of the journey. So then it's still okay. It has to look like a human being tampered with it, okay? Like this object has been tampered with by human hands. So then I have to be worried and I wouldn't be allowed to eat it, okay? So Haggah says to Ramah, so now says the Ramah, this is the most important cool. We had a cooler here. We had cooler number one. This is cooler number two. Okay, with respect to this entire thing. I mean, we already had the preliminary cooler before we even started Siman Kuf Yud Ches, which is that as a general rule, if there's no reusa, right, like sending an item that belongs to me that's kosher with a non-Jew as my delivery person or as my porter, but if it's not a reusa, it's just an object that I left somewhere and I, you know, and I do, and I disappeared for a while and I came back and the object's in the same place or whatever. So as a general rule, we pass in the Basel Shina Samina Ayin is mutter, which is why these inyanim are like important to describe properly, because when you have a Basel Shina Samina Ayin Shaila, generally it's not Basel Shina Samina Ayin Shaila. Why do I say that? Because Basel Shina Samina Samina Ayin is the heading to Siman Sama Gimel. So Siman Sama Gimel, we pass in the Kula. So you figured, okay, so why are we even learning this all together? Because there are two in Yon. There's Basa Shina Salam and Ayin, which we pass in the Kula, Siman Sama Gimel. And then there's Reusa case, okay? Basa Shina Salam plus there's a Reusa, meaning because I have to be more circumspect. It's like the case of where I actually see the ravens pick up a piece of meat, where I have to really be worried that maybe they're not bringing back the same piece of meat. So if I'm really directly and consciously, intentionally giving a piece of kosher food to a non-Jew or a non-trustworthy Jew to carry and take somewhere, so then I really have to be more worried because I know that I put it into the hands of somebody who could have swapped it with something else, right? As opposed to, oh, maybe when I wasn't looking, they took it, right? Okay, so that's what this whole siman is all about. So when I talk about the kulos here, these are not kulos of basa shina salamin ayin per se. These are kulos with respect to this particular scenario. Because we paskin like Levi, will be more makel to in these type of situations, as I mentioned, you know, quoting the Taz, quoting the Mordechai, I'll be more makel if there's a simin or there's a tzvias zayin in these types of cases as well. But I have two other major kulos. So kula number one that we mentioned already was I have mirsas. Normally, to create mirsas, I require that's the whole idea of the chosamas, right? I require one chosam, I require two chosamas whenever I have mirsas, right? So then that's going to be kula number number one. That's why I have all these descriptions of what do I need to do in order to create mirsis. That's really what this whole discussion of the siman has been about up until now. But now throws in the Rama a second lenient consideration. Okay, what is the second lenient consideration? That is, there has to be hana'a. There has to be some sense of hana'a, that there would be an incentive, a motivation for the Akum to switch this kosher item for a non-kosher item. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that also leads the way to leniency. Like if I'm dealing with an uman, you know, I'm dealing with somebody, you know, who's a worker, who after their courts in, I mean, not just a mirsas kind of situation, but where this the long-term hana is not going to be so great, you know, if they're going to, you know, end up not being able to, you know, keep their job altogether. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, another hana consideration. You could say it's more of a mirsas consideration, mm-hmm. but there's also a hana consideration of they have no incentive to prefer this piece of meat over the other piece of meat. Mm-hmm. This is only of something that I have to be worried that they're going to swap it, and they would get some benefit from the swapping, okay? Mm-hmm. Or I'm talking if it's a case where it's just wine and I'm worried that they're going to use it for they're going to take a little bit of wine, right? They're not necessarily returning all of the wine. They're just going to maybe take a tiny little wine for libation, right? So I don't have to be worried that they took all of the wine. Maybe they just took a little bit of the wine, but the rest of the wine is still going to be usher, even if it wasn't substituted for different wine, because since in order to do libations, what do you have to do? You have to handle the wine. Well, if you handle a little bit of the wine, guess what? All of the wine becomes usher in the process. That's called stam yenim, right?
Even if they just poured some out?
Yeah, because if they are lifting up all the wine to pour a little bit out, so all of it is going to be usher. Oh, yayim v'yishalko she'asu v'negiyah. But if you look and you see basically that what's inside, even though, according to the Rama, we're talking about a case where the contents were messed with. They were messed with actively by a human being, by human hands.
Right.
They were messed with. You're still allowed. If you look inside and you see, this is basically what I sent. And this is not the type of item that anybody would really have an incentive to swap for a different item. It's not so fancy. It's not so desirable. Mm-hmm. And there certainly would be no benefit in just returning something of equivalent quality, lo chashinan, so then we don't worry about it. Af shechosam mekukal, despite the fact the chosam is mekukal by human hands, because what's our assumption or interpretation? Our interpretation is that, yes, of course, the non-Jew messed with it, because he figured maybe there'll be some unbelievable treasure inside the Maltese Falcon, you know, something really amazing, and, you know, and then he opened it up, and it's the stam hot dog, whatever, you know, and he could get just as good a hot dog, you know, non-kosher hot dogs, you know, by going to Wrigley Field, you don't have to go Dafka to Dan Stand, whatever, you can get, you know, the non-kosher stuff.
Ones,
right, 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 yeah, and therefore, it can be presumed what was originally placed there is what is still there now, and you would still be able to eat it. So this is a major, major consideration. Mm-hmm. So we're still talking about, you know, it's the famous story, who was it? Some rabbi in Baltimore. I don't know. There was a story like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's on an airplane, and he goes to the restroom. In the meantime, they serve the meals, and he's sitting next to some non-Jewish person who's getting the non-kosher meal, and he's getting his special kosher meal, and he leaves his sandwich behind, you know, and then he comes back, you know, to his place, and he had already opened up the packaging and all that, and he realizes, uh-oh, Buster Shinisam and I in, so I can't eat it. Mm-hmm. So he sits down, and he decides not to eat it, and he just, you know, eventually the stewardess, you know, flight attendant, comes along and, you know, just takes it as garbage, and, you know, he just doesn't touch it. And the non-Jewish person next to him says, oh, how come you didn't, you know, touch your meal? It looks like such a tasty, you know, delicious kosher meal. You know, why didn't you eat it? And he says, well, you know, sort of, you know, just explain the halacha, it's the Jewish law. There's this thing, not that you really have to be, you know, that it's necessarily going to happen, but, you know, basar shenisal min ha'ayin, that if you leave meat unattended, so then you're not allowed to eat it afterwards, because who knows, maybe the person next to you, you know, swapped it, you know, for something else. Not that I'm accusing you of anything, but, you know, that's the Jewish law, and we live according to Jewish law, so therefore I couldn't eat it. And the person turned to him and said, I can't believe this! That's the most unbelievable thing, because you know that I just was always wondering, you know, what this kosher meat, you know, tastes like, because is it a little different from what I would have, and I was just very, very curious. So I took the kosher meat out of your sandwich and I ate it, and I put the meat that was inside my sandwich inside of your bread, and I can't believe this, that, you know, you realize that it's something that you shouldn't eat. Wow. You know, and so that's how the story goes. So that they point out, it's like the footnote to the story is that in that case it's very possible it would have been mutzah to eat the sandwich, because this is a scenario where there's no real hanah. You know, that he's going to get, he's not going to sell this meat on the black market or anything like that. Probably the meat would really be of equivalent taste. It's not like necessarily, you know, a clear benefit to eating this meat as opposed to the other meat. But nonetheless, that's like a good story to illustrate, like, you know, how you really have to be vigilant when it comes to these halakas. But it's not necessarily the case that the halakha really would have been applicable in that circumstance.
I think there are other reasons why it would probably not have been applicable, because 20 years ago, kosher meals were garbage most of the time that nobody wanted to eat except people who had to eat it.
So
therefore they wouldn't particularly be interested in it, I don't think. What?
The guy sitting next to him wouldn't know that.
he wouldn't, but at the same time it follows the requirement here.
Okay, so, anyway, so this is an extremely, you know, important caveat. So that's so again, that's, you know, cooler number to two in this sentence. So number one, anytime you have mirsas, you can be mekel. And number two, anytime that you can argue, the guy wouldn't have gotten hana, so you can be mekel as well. Okay? Then we have, what is considered to be a good chosim? So this is like, you know, what we call the quote-unquote boring part of the simon that a lot of people just skip over, but, you know, we don't skip over anything. We don't think anything is boring. So os achas kashuv kechosim achas. So what's considered to be an os? A chosim, you need two chosamas. You have a letter. You have like a big, like, chof, you know, standing for kosher or something. That's also like an os that would not be easy for a non-Jew necessarily to, you know, duplicate or to necessarily know the Hebrew language or however you're going to write the os. Like they used to do, like we quote in the Beis Hillel, Simon Samach Gimel, it's when, oh, you, both of you were out. You know, that they had the minhag with the animals, that they would label the animals in accordance with, like, you know, the name of the Parshas HaShavua, that they would write, which is something the goyim wouldn't necessarily know the Parshas HaShavua. So if you had, like, a kosher animal, so they would write the Parshas HaShavua and the kosher animals, so they would know, like, which haris were kosher, you know, when they were coming afterwards to do the, you know, the bedikos and the chop up the animals and so forth. Right. And that's still something, by the way, which we did in Shepeti when we were doing shechting the lambs, the sheep, in Shepeti. So that was the minhag. You write the day of the week, like Yom Beis, like Beis Gimel, whatever, it was Monday, Tuesday, and then you'd write, like some sign, like Lech for Lech Lecha, or, you know, Bamid for Bamidbar, or, you know, whatever the code was for the Parshas HaShavua. That's not done, I've noticed, in a lot of the Shlachtoses now, which is Shech the Gassos, the bigger animals, that they have other types of labeling that they do on the animals, but this was like the official type of labeling, like the old-fashioned, old-time type of labeling, with like where they would either make cuts into the animal, or on markers, they would, you know, just mark up, they would write in big magic markers, you know, the Parshas HaShavua. So osios constitute a chosim, it's considered to be a good sign. If you have two osios, you have like an O and a U, so then shtayim have shtei chosamos. That's considered to be like two chosamos. Utfusim avabishesh bem kama osios. If you have just a particular stamp, like and the stamp happens to have both the O and the U, it has, or the chaf and the K, whatever it has, you know, both of the osios that you're talking about. So even though they may have many osios, if it's just one stamp, they only counts for one chosam. That counts for one chosam. Okay. Lokashiva the chosam echad gimishkovenosim abasachas, because they all go on at once. So the practice, generally speaking, is to have stickers. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what's recommended. The post can talk about the stickers, where you have the stickers, where you have like part of the sticker, you know, on the food and part of the sticker, you know, on the package. And if you would remove it, it'd be very different. It would be very difficult to affix in the state. It would get all messed up. Once you remove it, you can't put it back in a way in which it would be clear that it would be intact. It would be clear that it was no longer intact. So that's the way that you do it. And you have basically two different stickers in two different places of the package. And that's the way that pretty much all the kosher agencies do it nowadays. When they're sending a package of meat or something, they have two stickers. Okay, two stickers that go across. Okay, where it's put in such a way where if it would be taken off, you would notice that it had been tampered with.
But back when,
yeah,
before we had printing and all of that stuff, you know, before the 1600s, they didn't use like metal chotamot.
Well, they had keys, as we'll see in a moment. One of the chosamos that they would use would be keys. No, they would write. They would actually write. They would have, you know, whatever markers, the O, they would use markers. in a place where you had many non-frum, you know, people who know how to write. We have apostates, a lot of apostates, you know, who may be Christian, and they know how to write the Hebrew language, where there's a proliferation, you know, of such individuals. So then, the ksav would not be a simon. It's only it's only considered to be a simon if you are able to recognize that this is exactly the ksav that you had affixed, as opposed to one that somebody else could have written. Which is why that's why you pick things like Parshas Hashavua, that you figure that, you know, as proficient and knowledgeable as the goyim may be, that's something that they're not going to be able to duplicate. Okay, so those are the types of things that we talk about when we speak about the chosamos. Okay,
you could also write an Akkadian. What the heck?
Okay, you try to find something. You know, people looking at us, I don't know, it's all Greek to me. Whatever. Okay. Very good.